The modality is important. The medication is important. But the number one predictor of success in therapy, of making positive changes in your life and improving your mental health, is the relationship you have with your therapist. That's the number one predictor. So while that relationship is so important and is so powerful, you need to give that relationship time to build.
Hey, welcome to The Upside of Bipolar, conversations on the road to wellness. I am so excited that you decided to join me today. We're a community learning how to live well with bipolar disorder, and we reject that the best we can expect is learning how to suffer well with it. I'm your host, Michelle Reitinger of MyUpsideOfDown.com, where I help people with bipolar disorder use the map to wellness to live healthy, balanced, productive lives. Welcome to the conversation. This is The Upside of Bipolar, Conversations on the Road to Wellness, and I am so excited to have my guest on tonight. This is Des Argentina. She's a licensed clinical social worker, and she's a host of the podcast, The Wellness Project with Des. So go ahead and introduce yourself.
My name is Desiree, but again, everybody calls me Des. I'm the host of The Wellness Project with Des. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I work as a therapist, and I right now provide the mental health services in a middle school and high school, and I just started my private practice.
Awesome. What made you decide to start your podcast?
Actually, it was kind of funny because I have a lot of different hobbies, kind of like a multi-passionate kind of person. And I originally had started my podcast. I love hearing about other people's hobbies and passions and creative projects. So I actually started out my podcast about that, about hearing people's passions and hobbies. But mental health came up in every conversation, and anxiety and depression and imposter syndrome. And I was already, you know, in the mental health field for a long time. And I was like, oh, I think there's something here. And I was already writing blogs about wellness and mental health. So I thought, you know, I think I need to kind of follow this calling and follow this direction. So then I started interviewing experts in the fields of mental health and wellness. I interviewed chiropractors, therapists of all different modalities with different specialties, Reiki masters, just people all within the wellness field. And then I really wanted to hear people's personal stories. So I started reaching out to people, seeing if they would feel comfortable sharing their mental health journey and their experiences with their ups and downs of mental health. And surprisingly, people were very open to it. I didn't think that they would be. That's why I started out with experts. One of the reasons, anyway, I also wanted to give people resources because therapy isn't always accessible, but people are very open to it. So now I do a mix, people's personal stories as well as experts in the fields.
That's fantastic. And that's how we met. I was a guest on I think you might have been maybe the first podcast that I was on. So it was my initiation into the podcast world. Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah. And for everybody that's on here right now, Michelle was on episode 79, I believe, of my podcast, if you want to go check that out. And you can put that in the notes as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I have lots of questions for you tonight. We talked the other day about some of the things that we could talk about, but I've been thinking a lot about it because with bipolar disorder, you know, the focus on this is helping people learn how to live well with their bipolar. And I resisted therapy for years. When I was first diagnosed, I was absolutely willing to take medication, but I was not going to go to therapy. And I had some really strange hangups about therapy. One of them was, I remember growing up, my grandmother had a mental illness, but I didn't know about it. I just knew she was in the hospital a lot, but I didn't know why. And I remember her saying, my therapist said this and my therapist said that. And in my little independent mind, I'm like, I am never seeing a therapist because I don't want somebody to tell me how to think, right? But I have learned that it is an essential tool if you want to live well with your bipolar. So I would like to hear from you, first of all, number one, what do you have to say to people who are resistant to therapy? I'm sure you've encountered this before. So what kinds of things can you help people understand why therapy is so beneficial? And then the other question I have after that, a follow-up question, is you talked about modalities. I didn't understand what that meant before. So maybe you can explain a little bit what modalities are and why they matter in therapy.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are great questions. So yes, I've run into working in the mental health clinic as well as working in the middle school and high school. I run into all different people or types of people that are resistant to therapy. Sometimes the client themselves, sometimes the parents. So it's very interesting because I think a part of it, how you said, and you know, this is your story, but in my experience, I think a lot of people are resistant to therapy for so long because I think there's still that stigma. But also I think that just as a society, we have normalized medication so much. And so I think just to take a pill is maybe easier for people. We also want that like quick fix, and therapy is a journey. It's not a quick fix. There's people in therapy. You could be in therapy for a few sessions to a few years, to all your life, depending. And I think a lot of people, I think it's a bunch of different reasons, but I think one is the stigma. One is the quick fix. One is that people don't want to really feel like there's something wrong with them when somebody says, or a doctor recommends, or a family member says, you know, I really think you need to see a therapist. People often get very defensive and say, well, I don't need a therapist. There's nothing wrong with me. And there is nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with going to a therapist. I like that it is getting more normalized, especially working in the middle school and high school. A lot of my students are so open about seeing a therapist or wanting to see a therapist. And that's actually where I run into this a lot, is that a student, you know, we can only do so much in the schools. So we very often refer our students to therapists outside of school, and we'll call the parents and say, you know, so-and-so is interested in going to therapy. I think it would really benefit them for this, you know, for so-and-so reason, they're struggling with anxiety, depression, whatever the issue is. And the parents are like, oh, there's nothing wrong with my kid. My kid doesn't need therapy. They never told me anything's wrong. So a lot of times I find working in the middle school and high school that it's really the parents that are resistant. And when I worked in the mental health clinic, sometimes the parents would bring their child in and kind of force them into therapy. But after a few sessions, the resistant kid or teen, I worked with kids between 5 and 19, they ended up loving therapy and wanting to stay in therapy. But a lot of them did start out resisting because the parents were like, and I think it was also framed as, you know, for a lot of them, there's something wrong with my kid here, like fix the issue. Yeah. So I think that's a part of the resisting, but I think therapy is a very great tool for a lot of people. And like I said, a lot of the resistors ended up really liking therapy. It's a little different in private practice because unless it's court mandated, people really are coming in of their own free will and not being forced. But for some people that does take a long time to get to that point. But as for your second question, modalities. So basically, these are different tools or specialties that therapists are more knowledgeable in. So there's different therapeutic techniques, basically. I'm trying to simplify this. There's cognitive behavioral therapy that talks about the relationship between thoughts and feelings and behaviors. There's EMDR, which is, I always forget the full.
Eye movement rapid desensitization.
Yes, yes. They could all be for any sort of mental health issue, mental illness, but they are specifically for beneficial for certain things. So for bipolar disorder in particular, DBT is very helpful on dialectical behavioral therapy. So that's what's recommended for people that have bipolar disorder. EMDR is great for trauma as well as phobias. So it's different things that therapists specialize in, but you can have a therapist that isn't just specialized in one of these modalities, but uses little pieces from each, which is more of what I do. I use a little bit of DBT, a little bit of CBT, a little bit of mindfulness. There's so many new ones coming out all the time. So right now, one that's really big is internal family systems that people are finding a lot of success with. So if you have a particular mental health illness, look up which modalities are more beneficial for you and try to seek out a therapist that is specialized in that modality.
Yeah, that's awesome. So my experience with therapy, when I very first started going, I went under duress. I was moving to another state that I had never been to. And my parents were really nervous about what was going on and weren't sure if I was mentally well at the time. But I was an adult. I was graduated from college at that point. So they didn't have a lot of say. And they told me they would support me if I agreed to go to therapy. What my parents thought mattered. And so I went ahead and agreed to go, and I didn't want to do it. And I remember my therapist, she wasn't fully licensed. She was doing her hours, her clinical hours, to finish her licensing. And so I think it was beneficial to me because I don't think she knew what she didn't know. Like, she was just like, you know, kind of analyzing like what's going on here. And so that was the first time that I learned about what modalities were. I didn't actually know it at the time. I learned about it later, but she used play therapy with me. because every time she would try to approach anything to do with my family, I would redirect the conversation because in my mind, I was the broken one. Nothing mm-hmm. was wrong with me, had anything to do with my family. And I think she was getting frustrated because I think she could see that there were some issues there. And so I walked in one day and there was this little sandbox with all these little toys around it. I'm like, what is going on? Like, this looks suspicious to me. But she did a great job. And it was really interesting to see how play therapy could be beneficial to an adult even, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's sand tray therapy in particular that some people are more focused in. And then, you know, working with kids and teens, I used a lot of play therapy. And some of the teens were resistant to play therapy, but some of them really, really enjoyed it. Because, you know, teens are like, I'm not a kid. I don't want to feel like a child. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really beneficial too, even for adults. A lot of therapists, I think, are more open to this now. But like you said, play therapy is really beneficial for adults too. I think it's so helpful when you're even just playing a game together and even just talking. So a lot of the teens will play, they love Uno, they love Jenga. So we would play games like that and just talk in the meantime. And that would just be helpful to get them to open up. And also coloring is great. I colored a lot with my teens in therapy. They love doing something with their hands while they were talking. So there's different things like that to help make the client feel comfortable. And I would encourage clients, if, you know, listeners here, if you are seeking out a therapist, think about what makes you feel comfortable in a session. Do you feel comfortable, you know, laying down? Do you feel comfortable closing your eyes? Do you feel comfortable playing a game? Do you feel comfortable coloring? Different things like that. That's totally okay.
And I think, you know, going from there, talking about like finding a good therapist, and it's, you know, you and I talked about this a little bit before, but it's hard sometimes when you start therapy, if you don't feel comfortable with your therapist, you don't want to go back.
Right.
And I think a lot of times people think, well, that didn't work out, you know, and then they just think therapy is not going to work. So what would you recommend? Like, do you have any thoughts about recommending, how do you find a good therapist, and how do you judge whether or not it's going to be a good fit for you? What do you do if it doesn't feel like a good fit? Like, what are the things that you would recommend people consider when they're looking for a therapist?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's a great question, because I think that now it's easier than ever to find the right fit for you. So there's all these websites that therapists list themselves on that you can go and search. You could see the picture of the therapist. You could see the different things that they specialize in. You could see the different issues that they're willing to take on. Some therapists only see clients that are experiencing grief and like life transitions. Some therapists only see couples. You know, some therapists only see kids. So you could actually put in filters in these different websites. And if you are a part of the LGBTQ plus community and you want a therapist in that community, I mean, you just click the tab there, you just click the box. So it's really cool. So you could go on, there's Therapy Den, there's therapist.com, there's Psychology Today. It's endless. You could go on and find listings of therapists and see if they take your insurance, see if they're private pay. There's so many available ways now to find the right therapist for you. And I would say, even I think a lot of people get discouraged that they get themselves, you know, a lot of the times, you know, you're resistant or you're put off and you finally go to therapy, you get yourself to go. And like you said, you go, you see your therapist and you're like, oh, that wasn't what I thought. I'm feeling discouraged. I'm feeling upset and therapy isn't for me. I would definitely encourage you to, first of all, not get your hopes up for the first session, because it really is an intake. If they're asking you all these different questions, your whole, you know, psychosocial history, your education, your family, your relationships, they're just asking the whole history, getting to know your presenting issue, medical history, mental health history with your family. So I wouldn't get discouraged after the first session. I would give it a few sessions, give it at least a month with that therapist. And I would encourage you as well to be open with the therapist about what's working, what's not working, why you feel there may be a disconnect. And I always tell clients, it's like finding the right hairdresser. Sometimes you have to try out a few until you find the right one for you. And that's totally okay. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
Well, and I think it's important to remember that this is not a quick fix.
Right.
Like, therapy, it is something, you know, when I finally realized how important therapy was, I thought, okay, I am going to go until I have nothing left to talk about. And then as I started getting into it, I thought, I don't think it's a good idea. I loved my therapist, and I don't think it's a good idea to stop seeing her. I talked to you a little bit about this before, that I asked her, like, when we got to the end of my therapy goals, because most therapists will have you set goals at the beginning so you can identify, like, where are we headed? What are we trying to do here? And we had accomplished my therapy goals. And I said, okay, so how frequently do I need to see you in order to stay your client? Like, what's the longest I can go between sessions? And it's monthly. So for her, every month I need to see her. And it's been such a blessing because I've had times over the, and that was probably about a year and a half ago, I think, that I went to once a month. And over that time, I've had triggers come up. I thought, oh, I need help with this. And it was like, I need to talk to you about this. And then we would increase the number of sessions we were seeing each other until we had worked through that trigger. And then we would go back to the once a month. So I stay with her and I thought, I don't know if I'm ever going to stop. And it's because I have bipolar disorder. Like, I will never stop having bipolar. And I want to make sure that I maintain somebody. I don't see a doctor anymore because I'm not on medication anymore. And so I need to make sure I have somebody that I stay connected with that can help me maintain a healthy mental balance, you know, and I can talk to if I'm having issues or whatever. So it's really important to make sure that you recognize that therapy is not something that's going to happen quickly. And you have to be patient with the beginning process, right? So I used to hate the intake part. I remember telling a therapist one time, I wish I could just like record my intake, give it to you, and then I'll come in after you've listened to it and you can just ask me questions. And like, I didn't like having to like regurgitate everything, you know, and start all over again with the therapist. So like you mentioned, give it a few weeks at least, because the first few sessions are going to be talking to them because they need to get to know you. They need to understand like where you're coming from, get kind of a baseline with you so that they know where they have somewhere to work from, right?
Absolutely. And I would say too, the modality is important. The medication is important, but the number one predictor of success in therapy, of making positive changes in your life and improving your mental health, is the relationship you have with your therapist. That's the number one predictor. So while that relationship is so important and is so powerful, you need to give that relationship time to build. You can't go into therapy and just, you know, I tell clients in the intake, sometimes those questions, they're super personal. And sometimes people cry in the intake and they feel uncomfortable because I'm a stranger to them. They just met me. And they have to tell me all of these personal things. And sometimes that's very intimidating, very nerve-wracking. It's so vulnerable. Some people come in and they're like, let's do this. I'm comfortable. This is great. But some people, it really does take a while to build that trusting relationship and builds that rapport. So definitely give it at least a few weeks. But if you're really not feeling that connection after a few weeks, you're really not feeling it. Just something is off and there's just something missing. That's okay. That happens. It is important to switch your therapist. And I know it's discouraging to start that whole process again and go through that intake again. But again, the relationship is so important and you really want to feel like you're involved in your therapy and really buying into it. So I do think that it is important to change. And I love that you brought that up because for these different conditions that are lifelong, such as bipolar disorder, such as schizophrenia, if you have a lifelong mental illness, it is so important to stay connected with your therapist. So if you're doing well, I do not recommend you just say, okay, things are going well, I'm going to discharge. Ask your therapist if you can move to that monthly sessions, maybe see the therapist every other month, every 3 months, just to stay connected. Because like you said, some things can trigger you. Things happen, right? We could be going through a really hard time in our life. We could get fired. We could be going through a divorce. There could be a death in the family. Something big in our lives can happen that could really trigger different things with your mental health. And you are going to want to call your therapist that you're already connected with, that you already have a relationship with, and say, hey, things really aren't going well. I'm kind of spiraling. I'm having an increase in symptoms. I need to see you. And they could get you on the books, hopefully.
I always thought it was weird when you go to therapy, nobody teaches you how to do therapy. Like, the therapist has lots of education, but you don't have any education. Like, you have no idea what you're supposed to do in therapy. That's how I felt when I first started going. I'm like, I don't even know what to say. So what do you recommend for people when they're going and they don't know what to talk to their therapist about? What can people do?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think a lot of people feel very intimidated and nervous when they're going to a therapist for the first time. So I would say, first of all, conversations like this are super helpful. Listening, a lot of therapists, including myself, have podcasts where they interview people, where they talk about the therapeutic process. And again, each therapist is different. So when you go to one therapist, your experience may be different from going to another therapist, just the way that they do things, the way that they present themselves. So each therapist you're going to see is different. And that makes people nervous. But I would say definitely, if you are interested in going to therapy, but you haven't been before and you're anxious, you know, watch, there's different documentaries series, there's different videos, there's different podcasts. Familiarize yourself in that way. But a lot of times, even when people are connected with a therapist, they've been going to therapy for a long time, they'll come in and not know what to talk about. And that could be for a variety of different things. Maybe you're on biweekly sessions, maybe you're on monthly sessions, and you don't know what happened in the last month, or you don't know what happened last week, or you're just super burned out. You're experiencing brain fog, you're super tired and fatigued, and you just can't even think. So I would say there's definitely a few things you can do. It's okay if you write things down throughout the week, just like bullet points. I want to talk to my therapist about this. I had an argument with this person. I had an uncomfortable situation at work with a client or a coworker, or my boss made some comment that didn't sit right with me. These are things that may really bother you in the moment that you want to process, that you want to have somebody to talk to about, that you want to get feedback from. And you may forget those things in the next 2 weeks or the next month until you see your therapist. So it's okay to write those things down and ask your therapist if that's okay. If you could, I don't think therapists would mind that you come in with a list of things you want to process or, you know, clear the air about. Some therapists are okay if you email them before the session and they read your email before the session. And, you know, you guys decide what you really want to talk about in that session in particular. So there's definitely different things that you can do. And I would encourage you that if you are in therapy, talk with your therapist and let them know, hey, I'm having a really hard time thinking of things to talk about. Can you help me kind of work this out? And, you know, how I could, even if you put notes in your phone or something like that, or some therapists will have you keep a feelings journal or like a mood tracker, different things like that. And you could reflect in that way if you keep, or if you're going for certain food issues and you keep a food journal or a body image journal or a negative thought journal, and then you could track the day and the time and the trigger and the feeling, and you could go over that in therapy as well. So definitely work that out with your therapist and find what works best for you and your therapist.
We talk about symptoms and triggers with bipolar disorder, and bipolar is a really complex disorder. There's a lot of different aspects that can contribute to the disorder. So, you know, there's the chemical side of it. And I know there's a lot of dispute about the foundation of that, but from my personal experience, I know that my brain needs something, like it's missing a piece and it needs something to get it back in balance. There's that piece of it. But when you have periods of time where you have unhealthy thoughts and, you know, you develop unhealthy thought and behavior patterns, you develop unhealthy coping mechanisms. You have, a lot of people with bipolar have unhealed trauma. I know I did. And a lot of people that I've spoken to have unhealed trauma. And then unhealthy boundaries is really common with people with bipolar disorder. And all of those things can contribute to the mood swings. And so, you know, I think that it's critical to track moods and to track triggers and things like that using a mood tracking app. I use Bearable and I love that app. It's the best one I've found so far.
Oh, great.
Because it's super easy to use. It's inexpensive. Like it's totally free. You can use a totally free version. I pay a tiny bit a month or a year. I think it's like $25 a year or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Just because it has additional insights that I like to use. But it's really easy to use. And that's a great way to keep track. Because the therapist only has what you have to present them, right? So a therapist is not a mind reader. They need you to give them information so that they can help you. And the more information, the more self-aware you can become, more effective the relationship will be with the therapist.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's super important. And I think the mood tracker is really great to show a therapist as well, because and write down for yourself, because a lot of times we have a false idea of what's really going on. We may think, oh, I've been, you know, really low every day. I've been sleeping so much, or, you know, I've been up all night. I'm not sleeping at all. Or I've been so moody, or, oh, things have been great every day. I'm in a good mood. And your partner's like, what? Like, so I think we have sometimes a really false idea of our own reality. So the tracker is great because it's accurate. You're writing it down in the moment and you're keeping data on yourself, and you can have an accurate idea of what's really going on. And it's so important, especially with a mood disorder, to track your mood. If there's any patterns, you're able to identify if there's any repeating triggers that you weren't aware of before. And when you're looking at your mood tracker, oh, this is something that triggers me all the time and I didn't even realize it. So there's a lot when you go over that with either yourself or a loved one, your partner, your therapist, you can get a lot of information from that. And that's super helpful. It's going to help you to realize what things that you need to include more of, what you need to stay away from. Like maybe you have a mood swing after you eat cake and you realize, oh, sugar's impacting my mood in a negative way. I need to cut down on sugar. It's a really great indicator of what's going on and finding those different patterns.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's empowering to be more proactive about watching what's happening with yourself, because I think my experience, like 13 years of my 12 years of my disorder, I felt like a victim. Like I felt like it was happening to me and I didn't have any control over what was going on. And I didn't understand like how to do this. And I struggled with long form journaling, like writing things out for years. It's only been in the last couple of years that I've actually started using like writing things out, like journaling as a therapy tool and as a self-care tool. When I was manic, my brain was working too fast to write. And when I was depressed, I couldn't think. So I just like those were not good tools for me. And back then, you know, that's been long ago, enough ago that there weren't mood tracking apps at that time. And so I couldn't use those kinds of apps. And so I think it's amazing now that we have these tools. You know, the thing that's nice about this mood tracking app is you don't have to think a lot, just tap little things. So, you know, how are you feeling on a scale of 1 to 5? You know, I feel like a 5. I feel like a 1. You know, what's your fatigue level? Like, how much sleep did you get? It's really easy to record those things and you can put as much or as little information as you want. And then you have a goldmine of information to take with you to a therapist. Then it'll be easier to say, okay, I need to work on this because I noticed when I have interactions with this person, I have anxiety attacks or I have a hard time sleeping during this period of time. So one of the other questions that I wanted to ask you is you've talked about self-care tools that you recommend. What are some of the self-care tools that you think are beneficial that could be helpful to people with bipolar?
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely something I want to talk about. And just like the lifestyle that somebody with bipolar disorder should strive for in their life anyway. It's when you have a mood disorder, structure and routine is very important. And that includes taking care of yourself in all realms of your life, not just your mood and your different triggers. And all of this is self-care. So there's, you know, your physical self-care, there's your emotional self-care, there's your financial self-care, there's your social self-care. So these different realms of self-care that are so important to your overall well-being. And these may include big lifestyle changes, but I think, again, routine and structure are so important for people that have bipolar disorder. One thing is a healthy sleep schedule is so important. I would say try really hard, as best as you can, go to bed the same time every night and wake up at the same time every morning. And I would say a part of that self-care is having a very healthy morning routine and wind down nighttime routine. So that can include, you know, journaling, reading, going over your mood tracker, doing something creative, maybe drawing or, you know, short story writing before bed, something healthy, something listening to a meditation app, just laying in bed and talking to your partner, just really winding down. I would say also the sleep is so important. There's different, how we said, there's so many apps out now. There's so many, like I have an Apple Watch. It tracks your sleep and it'll tell you if you're in the REM cycle for how long, it'll tell you how long you were asleep. So again, this is accurate data that it's showing you how long you were asleep. And it's so important to get between those 7 and 9 hours of sleep. So just really having a regular schedule, a regular exercise routine. And this is just physical activity. This doesn't have to be an extreme cardio workout every day. I mean, you could go for a walk,
yeah.
You know, go for a walk after work or during your lunch break. Get in some sort of physical activity that can be, you know, gardening. It could be swimming. It could be running. So whatever that looks like for you, but you're going to want to have a regular exercise routine, a regular physical activity routine, something that is important for people with bipolar disorder, I think, is expressing your feelings. A lot of times we're taught to stuff our feelings down, which is why it's one reason that therapy is so important, is such an important tool for people with a mental illness, because you really need to express those feelings and learn those emotional regulation tools. And we're taught to stuff our feelings down so much that, you know, when you ask somebody, oh, how are you? And they're like, oh, I'm really not having a good day. We're like, oh, here we go. Just say good and move on. You know, we're kind of taught that. We're not taught to, our feelings aren't really accepted on a daily as much as we're trying to shift that and change that. So I would say find some way to express your feelings in a healthy way. There's so many groups now. I mean, you could go on meetup.com. You could join different Facebook groups. There's different anonymous, you know, mental health apps. I'm trying to think of the one. It's called Blue Fever. I think it's anonymous. And you could go on there and kind of journal and people react to you and send you comments and things like that. But find a way, a healthy outlet. If you're creative, that could be, you know, creative writing. You could write a story about your feelings. You could write lyrics if you're, you know, musically inclined. Artistically, find a way to express your feelings in a healthy way. If you are a talker, find somebody that you can talk with, whether that's a therapist or a loved one or a pen pal. I mean, there's just so many unlimited things now in our, you know, we're so connected as a society now. I would say a part of self-care that people don't often think about is your doctors, you know, seeking that accurate diagnosis, getting on those medications if they're helpful for you, you know, seeing your therapist, having signing all the releases of information and have everybody connect, have everybody on the same page is so important. Your primary care doctor, whether you really like acupuncture or Reiki or, you know, massage therapy, get all these people connected in your care and in your treatment. I think that's very important. Identifying your trigger. Again, you can do that through the mood tracker. You can do that through journaling, but it's so important to identify those triggers so that you not only learn how to avoid them, but sometimes triggers are unavoidable. So you can learn how to deal with them better. Eating, your diet is so important. So everybody's different. I know for me that my body does really well when I eat a lot of fruit. Maybe for somebody else, it's a lot of vegetables. Maybe for somebody else, it's a lot of oats, you know, whatever works best for you. And again, talk to your doctor or if you have a nutritionist. So definitely figure out what kind of diet works for you and try to stay away from that fast food. Try for somebody with bipolar disorder, really try to limit things that affect your mood, like sugar, like caffeine, like different drugs, like alcohol. So try to limit those things. So yeah, those are different things off the top of my head that are a part of self-care. One more thing, that financial self-care can be so important to track your finances and your budget, because for some people with bipolar disorder and that mania, it is spending. So definitely track your spending and your budget and your finances. So finances are a part of self-care as well.
Yeah, awesome. Oh man, this has been so great. I wanted to put a plug in for you. Desiree has lots of really great resources and stuff that she provides. Right now and starting in February, I think you have the 30-day self-love challenge. Is that right? Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do have a self-love challenge. So it's for 30 days and it's different activities you can do. So it's a PDF calendar that you will download when you sign up. And the link is in my bio right now. So you can go sign up for that and you'll instantly be able to download it. It's going to go straight to your email and you can do different activities each day to practice that self-love. And yeah, thank you. Go check that out. And it's very actionable things. It's like journal, you know, talk to somebody you love today, just very simple, actionable things. And if you want to take it a step further, I am offering a 30-day self-love workshop. It's going to be in a private Facebook group. It's only $27, but there is a promo code if you share the event. So I'll send you the promo code to get 10% off. So we are going to be going over the 30 days of self-love challenge in that workshop each day. But as well, on top of that, I'm going to be having different self-love activities. I'm going to be having different journal prompts in there, a lot of different reflections. So yeah, it's going to be really fun. So definitely at least download the PDF because that will be really great for you to practice. Because I love February, you know, it's the International Month of Love, but I like to think of it as the month of self-love, which is so, so important. That's one way you can find me. Again, I do have a podcast, The Wellness Project with Des. You can follow me on Instagram. I'm on TikTok. So there's all different ways that you can find me. And I try to post mental health and wellness content every single day.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I'm so thankful that you were on. This has been amazing. And I will, and I'll make sure that we get this uploaded. And thanks so much for coming on. Thank you, everybody. Talk to you next time, Upsiders.
Thanks so much for having me. And everyone, make sure you go check out Michelle's guest appearance on my podcast, episode number 79 as well. So it was such a great conversation.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Des.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Hey, thanks for joining us today.
If you're ready to start on your path to wellness with bipolar, go to myupsideofdown.com and get your free mood cycle survival guide, 4 steps to successfully navigate bipolar mood swings. If you're ready for more, check out the map to wellness. Until next time, Upsiders.